Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Juror 13 show on Blog Talk Radio. I'm Denny Griffin. For the next hour, I'll be your host. And tonight we have two special guests. Both of these guests are co-hosts of the popular Blog Talk Radio show, Justice Interrupted, which can be heard on Tuesday nights. And before I get to them, let me introduce the founder of Juror 13, Nikki Hunter. Nikki, welcome.
Thank you very much. Good to be here, and nice to hear from you two ladies, too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, now, it's going to take me a few minutes to make the introductions here. So let me start with Susan Murphy Milano. Susan is an expert domestic violence advocate, has developed specific tools and techniques victims need to safely leave an abusive relationship. Her books, Defending Our Lives and Moving Out, Moving On, are considered the Bibles of how to make the move away from abuse and deal with the many confusing situations surrounding a breakup or divorce. Susan is an adult survivor of her parents' violent marriage. Her father, a Chicago violent crimes detective, murdered her mother and then took his own life after the couple separated. Susan vowed to make changes after finding their lifeless bodies and trying to make sense of the tragedy. Susan's quest for justice was instrumental in the passage of the Illinois Stalking Law and the Lautenberg Act. She has been prominently featured in newspapers, magazines, radio, and television, including The Oprah Winfrey Show, Larry King Radio, ABC's 2020, Justice Files, E! True Hollywood, CNN, Sunday Today Show Profile, and many, many publications. Susan, welcome.
Thank you, sir.
And along with Susan is Robin Sachs. Robin is an L.A. County Deputy District Attorney who specializes in prosecuting sex crimes against children. For over 15 years, she has prosecuted some of the most despicable defendants who committed the most heinous crimes. She's an adjunct professor of women and crime at Cal State Los Angeles and a lecturer on criminal law and the justice system in UCLA's paralegal training program. Robin has written 6 books that draw upon her vast experience as a sex crimes prosecutor, child advocate, and parenting expert. Her most recent release, Predators and Child Molesters, What Every Parent Needs to Know to Help to Keep Kids Safe, won the Amber Alert Book of the Year Award. She is a regular contributor on Women in Crime, Inc., a blog about crime and media issues from women, criminal justice professionals, and authors. In her spare time, Robin also writes the weekly Sachs Facts blog, found on www.robinsachs.com, which provides resources for everything from scouting for a nanny to getting a trust notarized at 3 a.m. Robin, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Hey, Susan. Hey, Nikki.
Hey. Hi.
Okay, we got, I know Nikki had wanted to discuss some domestic violence issues to start with, and one case in particular is Drew Peterson. So can we start with that? Nikki, why don't you get into Drew Peterson?
You know, I have to apologize because I didn't get to, I didn't have a chance anyway to listen to Justice Interrupted when they were discussing Drew Peterson. What is the latest on him, Susan?
The latest is I know that they were in court today for a third judge. I haven't been able to find out or follow up with what's going on. You know, he's still behind bars, thank God, and, you know, they're still pursuing, you know, we all thought for a very long time, you know, Robin and Stacy and even you, Nikki, we had said that if he's arrested on anything, it's going to be in Kathleen Savio first, because that seemed to be the easiest and made the most sense because of what they discovered. I think that a lot is coming out that it hasn't been disclosed about what happened in the timeline when they found the will, items and information that she had changed prior to her death that no one knew about, and then this kind of paper will showed up. I think it was interesting that on Justice Interrupted last week, we spoke to Steph Watts, who was with Good Morning America and also the producer for On the Record with Greta, that wife number two, Vicki Conley's brakes were cut, and
oh
she almost tragically died with a friend. And it was when, remember Robin, Drew said, Steph had said that Drew just came in unexpectedly and said, you know, why don't you go home early and I'll close up the bar. That it's something he had never done before. So the patterns are characteristics. So really you have a real serial offender here. Who knows how many other people, but, you know, you've got wife number 4, 3, and 2.
Yeah, and they've had some curiosities about some other people that he all of a sudden was the cop who showed up at their deaths. I don't know that there's ever been any facts made about that, but it just makes you curious. There are a lot of curious things about that man that I just don't trust.
Well, there's so many things that are hearsay, and you have to go based on the facts, and I think that Robin could speak to the prosecutor under this as what's factual.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, and first of all, I think that the whole judge decision actually, in terms of my follow-up with the case, was yesterday where actually they finally agreed to a judge that's going to hear the case, which is actually a step in the right direction. But if anyone is expecting for this case to have any sort of resolution at any time soon, that is just not going to be a reality. This is going to be a case that the one thing that Drew Peterson has on his tongue, considering the fact that he had, or on his side rather, considering the fact that he is already in custody and the bail has not been reduced, is time. And the only thing that's going to make this case get worse for the prosecution is what's their biggest hurdle right now, and that's the passage of time and what has happened as a result of the passage of time. I think that in some ways, many people are waiting and thinking that the passage of time is going to bring about an indictment for Stacey Peterson, and I don't know if that's going to happen, but if that does, I would like to see this case handled expeditiously.
Well, what about the information with the person who was allegedly hired as the person that Drew had sought out to allegedly kill Kathleen before she died? What is that for a case? I mean, that was kind of a bombshell that Glasgow dropped the day of the hearing.
Sure, that was dropped about a week ago or so, in which there was a information that was brought out that there may have been a murder-for-hire arrangement that went on, and certainly that's going to be helpful, but still, this is going to be a case where forensics are going to be questioned, the passage of time, this is going to be, they're going to try to use the, you're trying to prosecute him for Stacey Peterson, but you don't have enough, so you're going to go back and dig up an old body and try to piece together the Kathleen Chavo case, and I'm not saying that it's not, that it holds water, and it doesn't represent my personal opinions, however, a jury who wants to find reasonable doubt and is looking for reasonable doubt could find it there. And so what I'm saying is we have this evidence, we have it fresh. Let's, you know, run them through the coals now.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just think that one thing for everyone to know is that the only thing that gets better with time is fine wine, as far as I'm concerned.
Was anyone surprised or disappointed that the remains found a while back turned out not to be Stacy's? I know there was a lot of anticipation that when the announcement was made that there had been the discovery that was her. Were you folks surprised that it wasn't?
I wasn't. I mean, you're going to see hit or misses. You're going to see a lot of people, because of the blue barrel, because the neighbor was smart enough who was walking, or the person walking with their daughter and husband, were smart enough to take a picture. There's blue barrels all over the place. And there's speculation by a lot of folks. You're going to have that until actually if and when she is ever found. That's something that's just going to continue like a tale until it's confirmed. And we're going to have more people pop up that are going to be either Stacey Peterson or, you know, we forget a lot about Lisa Stevick, who is still missing, who's been missing for a couple of years now.
They were hoping that it was either Stacey or Lisa at the time. So it was disappointing to me that it wasn't one or the other.
But at least somebody was recovered. The end result is, especially for families as we do on Justice Interrupted, as we heard Drew Keske talk about last night, whose daughter is still missing since 2006, at least you bring them home. And I think that whoever this person was, at least they were able to have, their family was able to have closure.
Mm-hmm.
I think we may have lost Robin. It looks like she's dropped off the screen here, hopefully. If there was a problem, she'll call back. Okay, there's four or five different cases I wanted to specifically talk about tonight.
All right.
And we're getting now more into the child murder and child crimes against children cases. One of them that I heard a little bit about recently and not a great deal about it, and I just wanted to run it by and see if perhaps Susan or Nikki had heard of it. And I hope I'm pronouncing this right. The first name, Aliyah, A-L-I-Y-A-H, Bedwell. It's a California case. Have either of you heard of that?
I'm sure Robin has.
Hey, Robin.
Oh.
Is Robin back on?
No, Robin's not back on. Chloe, Nikki, how about you? Have you heard of this case?
No, I haven't heard of that one. The only one that I've been just watching on the television news has been the Navaya Buchanan one. And
okay.
That one's been just amazing to me. That
Nikki, though, they're all amazing. And
I
it's
know.
Amazing that we – I saw something on Facebook earlier about an 8-year-old girl that I didn't know about in Michigan that they were looking for. I mean, it continues to climb every single day. And I'm not plugging – it could have been the fly lady that wrote the book about predators, but it happened to be Robin Sachs.
Mm-hmm.
And why that book is so – important is because it teaches parents how to teach their kids and how to deal with this, because this is not a conversation that we have with our children and our grandchildren. It's
well, this little girl, Navaya, is from Michigan. I don't know if it's the same one. This one's 5 years old.
Yeah, that's the one.
And her mother wouldn't have paid attention to any book because she was – her boyfriend was the convicted sex offender, and she's totally defending him.
Well, look at. Remember the case Hannah Mack. Hannah
yep.
Mack was a little girl that actually kind of brought us together when you started 013, and we were just both so shaken that they had arrested somebody that wasn't attached to the crime, but that had been there. They had found the little girl's body hanging in the garage,
mm-hmm.
and she had been sexually assaulted. You know, I think the point is, what possesses people to murder these children? And then when the parents are arrested, or a parent is arrested in the crime, you know, it seems to take on a different life instead of what it should be is advocating for the child who isn't here to speak.
You know, Susan, I've got a good question for you, if you don't mind. If I veer off just a hair, it goes kind of into your realm.
Okay.
About women who put up with abuse and stuff. This week we've been watching the, I hate to call him Clark Rockefeller, but that was one of his many aliases.
Mm-hmm.
He had kidnapped his daughter last year, and then they found out that he's never been this person. He's got about 8 or 9 different aliases that they actually know of. And I think the defense was really giving the mother a bad time for not realizing who this person was and all the things that she trusted in him, et cetera, et cetera. And why didn't she move away earlier? And all this kind of stuff. But she was saying, here she made almost $40,000 a week, but he controlled the purse strings. He wouldn't move. At that time, I think they were in New York. She wanted to move back to Boston. She had already
They were
wanted.
In New Hampshire, I think, in Cornish, New Hampshire, and they divorced in December of 2007 with
right.
a custody agreement that allowed him to see his daughter only 3 times per year, supervised by a social worker.
Yes, because she hired a private eye. And it's like we have no record of who this man is. He doesn't exist. You know, so she had some of her questions about him at that point.
Ladies, let me interrupt just a second. I believe we have Robin back with us.
I'm back. You know, it's modern-day technology. I have to tell you, I just moved new offices. We just spent some time in Book Expo. But I've been following the Clark Rockefeller all day long. And I'm with you, Nikki, on hating to even call him that, because doesn't just buy into his theory of who he is. And it was interesting today in conversation, if you were watching Headline News with Vinnie Politan, they were having this back and forth conversation of, you know, whether the insanity aspect versus the narcissistic, you know, premeditated part. And the fact of the matter is that this guy is like the classic domestic violence batterer. He, I forget the wife's name, and I apologize for that, but she made in the upwards of $1 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
Yet while she was making that kind of money, he controlled the purse strings. He controlled how much she ate, how much she was able to take for spending money when she went into the city. They lived, I believe, in New York or New Hampshire or New Jersey or New Hampshire. And it was very calculated how he manipulated her. And he should go down, and he should go down in flying colors.
You know, here's the interesting part. They called him narcissistic and delusional, but the problem with that is, I don't know about Massachusetts laws, but I know in most states, narcissistic that's personality disorder. Personality disorder is not an insanity defense.
Absolutely not. You're absolutely correct, and that's the case, as you know, nationally throughout the country. Narcissism is a, you know, everyone has some sort of disease or psychological disorder, if you were to really look at it. I'm sure we've all suffered at some moment in our life from anxiety, from stress, lack of sleep and exhaustion. All of those types of things could be psychological defenses, but it's such the defense, in order for it to be a psychological or an insanity defense, it must be such that you don't know not only the nature of what you're doing, but the consequences of what you're doing. And it's very hard with the actions, with a very calculated name like Rockefeller, by being able to use the manipulation to say, yeah, I'm full of myself, but I didn't know what I was doing.
Oh, okay, explain this one to me, because in chat today, the Usher 13 people were really getting a laugh out of it. Dr. Keith, is it, Ablo? I can't. Anyway, he was the expert witness for the defense today. Now, he had testimony that totally contradicted an article he wrote last year, because I had the article too, and I'll try and post that later.
Well, payment does a lot of things to change your memory. You know, if you're paid by any kind of an expert as an expert, you're going to kind of mold or meld what your opinions mm-hmm. are going to change.
We call that the hired gun defense.
Yes, and what was interesting about it, now I don't get this, okay? So maybe somebody has more knowledge on this or not, but somebody tell me the difference between a lie and untruth, because they kept saying, no, it's not a lie, it's just an untruth. And I thought, there's not a juror in that box that's not giggling right now, because if, you know, to me, if my child is telling an untruth or a lie, it's pretty much the same thing. And in
that's true. And what they say, what the lawyers say when they're arguing these kinds of things, like, for example, whether or not that kind of thing can even be argued in front of a jury, what the defense and the prosecution, or what the judge will ultimately do in terms of splitting the baby in the end, is the judge will say, you know what, it's up to the jury to decide how much weight to give that testimony, and so it doesn't go to admissibility, it goes to weight. And so that's exactly what they're hoping to do, is to have the jury decide how much weight are we going to give the distinction between this, you know, theory of untruth versus a lie, and hopefully the jurors are of the mindset that you are, which is the mindset that I am, is another word for an untruth is a lie.
Yeah. So I was a little worried that Beth Karras had said today that it looked like a very, very young jury, and I thought, well, with defense experts, et cetera, and some other experts, you can't distinguish between the truth and the almighty dollar sometimes. And so they don't know when I was young, I used to always believe in politicians and doctors. And now that I'm older, I know that you really have to pay attention. And I'm hoping that the young people won't be, you know, taking everything him as to the honest to God's truth, because he's got doctor before his name. And then I thought, you know what, after the lie on truth thing, no, they won't have a problem with making up their minds on this.
But
a lot of those kids are, young people are extremely smart.
But isn't it interesting that the wife is kind of brought in on trial? Isn't it
yes, that's
that,
what I was going to bring up.
Always. It's disgusting,
I mean,
isn't it?
That is just disgusting.
Would
you know,
you explain?
Blame yourself. I'm sorry, what?
That's what I was going to ask you, Susan. Could you explain what that poor woman was probably going through before she finally got back to Boston around her friends, and within 4 months she had this all planned out? It was her getaway plan.
You know, I hate to say this, but I I speak from experience. I mean, I've been in the belly of the Better Women's Movement, and I'm embarrassed by my selections of individuals that I've chosen in my life, not realizing. And you think that when you know better and you stay away from people who maybe are abusive or controlling, but you don't see the subtleness of somebody's actions or behavior. And they're so wonderful at the beginning of a relationship. Think about when you're going out and the person is, you know, opening the door and just being very attentive and being wonderful and just looking at you with those eyes and that big, bright smile. They got you. And there's something about them that they can almost sense when you have this little bit of vulnerability. And it's like taking one arm and just with one move pulling the chair over to you and say, get over here, I can't see you. And from there, you know, you have those intimate moments. You share this bond and this time, and you love this person because this person shows you a different side of them. And then over time, because that's not how the relationship started out, over time, they've won you over, and then all of a sudden they begin to chisel at you. Little by little, it's very invisible, and it's not something that people see right away. And then over time, it's almost like you're brainwashed. And we want to fall.
What the defense attorneys do. It's like what defense attorneys do. They chisel you. They wear you down. They little by little, they do these things that you don't notice.
And I'm very embarrassed to say that, you know, I have one girlfriend who constantly says to me, or had said to me for a lot of years, you know, you don't take your own advice. Beware of those in sheep's clothing. Because I was so willing, you know, to see people for what they were. And not realizing that I had probably been more like my mother than I wanted to admit because I come off like this big, strong, you know, defender. But we all need to be loved and wanted, and we all fall prey to these people. And then to get criticized for it in a case where, you know, this guy has been masquerading as somebody else for all these years, the facts are not being presented. Instead, the defense is just turning it the other way. We want to blame people. Do we want to blame Kathleen Savio and Stacey Peterson for dating Drew Peterson? Do we want to blame Christine Raines for seeing this guy? Well, she kind of should know better. But, you know, do we want to blame this personality that these men seem to have that is just so overwhelming and overpowering? It starts with a lot of things, and blaming's not one of them. And we're not accepting of it.
Yeah. My experience, and I'll be 60 this next week, is I had to think about this after my first divorce. Because, you know, I dated a few men, and it was like, nope, you know. And I thought, what is it? Why is it that we pick some of the people that we do? And I thought, you know, a lot of women, at least myself, make our men into what we want them to be.
Say that again?
And who we want them to be. In other words, if he said he was this person and that person, we want him to be that person. And if he was kind to you at first, we remember when he used to be kind and open the door. Like
but
he
I think
was
there, I think everybody's different, and I'm going to tell you why. I didn't realize this. I didn't have a lot of communication with my father, and I feared him. He was a tall, very handsome man. I didn't see how much that a person that I was married to until afterwards, how much he was really like my father. But in a different way, he didn't get angry and drink. He was happy and drank. He was very calculating. He was charming. He was witty. But I realized that as a little girl, I missed that interaction with my father. So somehow, I think it's different for everybody. And I didn't see it. I was blinded by what I didn't see because I didn't have it, or maybe I wanted my father there. So I think it's different for everybody.
I think
like your DNA.
I think that's true, too, though. I know that my daughter definitely married a man just like her father. And, you know, I have to tell you something, though. My ex is not a bad man, other than verbal abuse. It was okay. Robin, what else do you think about this?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, listen, I think that we all sit here, and when it comes into domestic violence and when it comes into sexual assault and when it comes into any crimes, it's very easy to look from the outside and say, this is what I would have done. This is what I would have thought. This is how I would be different. And unfortunately, it's that thought that perpetrates the abuse, because when we end up in those relationships, we deny and lie to ourselves. We all have weaknesses. We all have insecurities. We've all made bad judgment calls. And that doesn't mean that we have to subject ourselves to people that abuse us and abuse our kids. And the more important thing is to be open, to listen, to recognize and possibly know that you're in a situation that needs to be, that one needs to free themselves from. And that's why I love working with Susan so much, is that Susan has the action plan. Because there is, because when you, once you're engrossed and ingrained in that environment, it doesn't get easier to leave. It gets only harder, because then the people that you have to turn around and turn to support are saying, I told you so, or you have to say you were wrong. And people who are bright people who've ended up maybe with the wrong people, it's not just weak people or victim type people or loser people that end up in abusive relationships. It's smart people. It's good people. Religious people, whatever it may be, and people who may come from great families or whatever. And so what, once you recognize that you're in that situation, I think a lot of people think, oh, well, it's too late now. No one's going to listen to me or care about me. I'm already stuck here. But there are resources and there is help and there are ways of breaking free. And really the key is breaking free.
And it's not remaining at the scene of the crime. And that's women return. There was a case out in North Carolina. The woman wanted to go confront the guy. She drove to confront him. She wound up dead, found in the trunk. Her body was burned with a bullet. This morning
same
in
thing
Chicago.
Sorry, Susan, same thing happens in sexual assault. The worst thing that parents can do for kids is to go and confront the abusers and think that they're going to get some explanation. It ruins the investigation. It ruins the potential prosecution, because the suspects are tipped off, even if they don't end up dead, even if they end up in a scenario where they get a great statement or whatever, let the cops do the cops' job the cops needed to, and let's get the people who are the victims, the people who really should turn from victim to survivor, the heck out of that situation and on to new beginnings.
And don't return. Don't return. You know, we all want to confront and say we have a secret or we know something. That is the worst mistake you can make in the heat of a crime or the aftermath of it, to think you're doing something. And it can be detrimental.
Ladies, let me butt in for just a minute here. Robin, while you were gone off the phone line, there were two cases raised, and I'd like to run them by you and see if you had any comment or were familiar with them. One is a California case that seems rather bizarre. It's gotten a certain amount of coverage, but not a great deal.
It's a double murder up in Malibu?
No, this is Alaya Bedwell.
Okay.
Are you familiar with that case at all?
I'm not. But tell me about it.
Well, I don't know a great deal about it. What I hope is that somebody will call in and maybe can enlighten us further. It seems to be a rather bizarre case about alleged child abuse and child pornography and a domestic custody case and so forth. And the police apparently don't want to investigate it or have been doing a rather poor job, according to the allegations. And then there's a lot of court action, civil court action going on and so forth. And there's some allegations of incompetence and cover-up and so on and so forth. And it really hasn't caught on the way I thought something like that would in the media. You know, that seems to be something that would have the reporters celebrate.
She's supposedly been sexually abused by her father, who incidentally has custody.
Well, I have to do some look-sees into that case. Now, I haven't even heard about it myself. I've been, as you know, Susan, I've been in New York. There's no excuse. I should be in touch with my own state here. But no, I haven't heard. But let me tell you, the one thing that I'm finding so frustrating, especially while I've been on this leave of absence from the DA's office, is how many cases that I get calls about. And what we do at Justice Interrupted and what you guys do so well here is to really bring up and highlight not just these cases of the, you know, so-called Rockefeller and Drew Peterson and the media cases, but the so many other cases that need the media attention. And frankly, you know, it is bizarre, and you know, lack of attention sometimes allows for inappropriate actions to happen behind closed doors. So I think it's great that you're mentioning them, and now I'll get on it and looking it up so I can speak with some sort of intelligence on it.
I have a caller on the line. Maybe it'll be somebody to enlighten us a little bit about this case.
Hi.
Hi, caller. You're on the air. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Yeah, this is Dr. Jan. Aaliyah Bedwell, her parents are in Placid County, California, and he is a well-known attorney. And apparently he has been sexually abusing this child. And the mother has evidence to the fact of a tape that was recorded, and it's called The Worm, and it's been on the Internet. And she's been trying to get custody. What keeps happening is because he is so well-known in Placid County, he's a big-time lawyer, judge. I'm not sure of that. But she can't get anywhere. She can't get anybody to listen to her.
You think she has an actual tape? Because it's Robin, I'll tell you, at 2.5 years old, that's a very difficult case to even take on as far as those accusations, as far as proving all of that. And this, so is the tape actually of the father doing this?
No, it's the tape of the little girl who her and her mom were just laying in the bed talking, and she just happened to have the recorder on, and she was saying, Daddy has me suck on his worm. He makes me do stuff. She doesn't even want to go to the house with him. She wants to be at home with her mother. She is petrified. She is, the tape is pretty bad. If you went to the SaveAaliyah.com, it's got the tape on there, and it's pretty graphic.
I think Robin can answer that better than me. I mean, that's...
But that's basically what's happening, and she's not getting anywhere. The mother.
Not
with getting anywhere.
Family services?
Not even. Nobody will listen because he is so well known in Placid County.
Robin? Did we lose Robin again?
No, it shows that she's on. Oh no, wait a minute. No, she's gone again.
I think I would ask her, because she would know best, and it's also in the state of California, and she would know best as to what direction something like this would go, because again, at 2.5 years old,
she's still three,
very young, different set of circumstances, different set of criteria that is used in that age range. So like I said, Robin would be able to better offer.
Well, the other thing too, Susan, is the fact that when the mother has supervised visits with this child and she wants, you know, and it's time for it to end, the daughter just screams to high heaven and clings to her mother and says she doesn't want to go. She doesn't want to go. And
if she has supervised visits, is it with somebody from the state or the county?
Yes. It's the same county that this guy is well known. His name is Bidwell. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he's either a judge or a district attorney, and his family is well into that.
We would have to get more information on that. Maybe that's something that Justice Interrupted can look into without all the facts, you know, of everything.
Susan, let me ask you, I'm getting some inquiries through chat and at other sites I monitor, and would it be okay if one of the people who's following this case closely could maybe email you some information or some areas you can
research?
Absolutely,
and if they have a direct connect, that would make it easier, as long as they identify themselves and are open. It's not going to go anywhere.
Okay.
People think that, and I've said this before, but not in this venue, that I and we are very careful about what information is put out. You know, sometimes people hear on some of the shows that I've done, I won't go to that level of something. I get a lot of information where it doesn't get posted on the Justice Interrupted or on my own blog, because I am about preserving the case or preserving the information and making sure. It's not my job to say I found it, the information, or I know who killed whom, or I have the... That's not... I want to get what's necessary to bring the case to the proper person and then back off and go to another one. I don't want to there's nothing in it for me to say and raise a flag and be Jane Wayne and say, well, I got it, I got the answer, I figured it out. I don't care. I care about bringing justice and moving on to the next person and getting the information where it needs to go. It's not about tallying up scores about cases being solved and who did what, when, where, why. This is about bringing the case where it goes. So anybody that has anything on any kind of a case, not just this one, you know, they can always email us. They can always get a hold of us through Nikki, through Denny. I mean, there's a number of ways, and know that the information stays where it's supposed to.
And it has been documented in the last 10 months while she's been in custody with her father being threatened and abused while seeing her mother on supervised visitations 2 hours a week. And she has said things out of this child's mouth now. This is out of the child's mouth that she says that daddy has me put the toothpaste somewhere where girls like it. Daddy has a worm. He makes me touch it. An elephant. And she put her arms to her nose to make the trunk. And like this, she says, and she put her two hands together in the palms, making a circle, and her thumb.
Again,
and
none of
fingers.
Us have enough information. This is so touchy and so delicate that anything I say or you say, there has to be other information and other documentation, because there's a lot of factors here. And I have participated in some of these cases. Robin's probably participated in thousands of them. That's why they have a Stewart House in California, which
okay.
Robin is part of. And also, you know, you've got Heather Steele and these other people. You I'm just saying, you can't go by what we see. It's got to be a little bit more and to put things together to make sense, because it'll get shot up, especially if this guy is so well known and his
mm-hmm.
family is so well known. And then also, it's about not showing your cards, not showing the offender cards, not showing your hand, and thinking outside the box. So he's probably listening right now. I mean, and I don't think it's appropriate to discuss any further until somebody gets us this stuff in the case.
I have to agree with you there, Susan.
Okay.
Just for informational purposes, I just learned through the chat room that actually reminded me, I already knew it, that the mother of the little girl is under a restraining order and can't discuss the case with anyone, the media, or anyone else.
All right, I'm not the media. I am an advocate for people's lives. There's a big difference.
Right.
And whatever someone tells me cannot go any further. So,
well, the family has been on Simon Barrett's show a lot. Besides the mother, the rest of the family has been. So they have talked about
it. And that's
the
best way, isn't it? To keep a victim twice, double, a three-year-old and a mother, you keep them quiet by putting a gag order. Now, what sense does that make? Then
right.
You keep them continued. Then so there's abuse going on, alleged abuse. Then you keep everybody hostage so that nobody can talk. You know what I say? F that. I'm sorry, but that doesn't work with me. And that's wrong, and there's something that really stinks.
Okay, what we'll do then? I'll the couple of people that do have information on this, I'll get them hooked up where they can send the information to you, Susan. You
Thank
can look
you.
It over and then
As
see
you
what
you think.
As you
can see, this boils my blood.
Okay, we still don't have Robin back on, but the other case was the Buchanan case. If she comes back on, somebody remind me and we'll run that by her and see if she has any thoughts on that one. And thanks very much, Dr. Jane, for your call. We really appreciate it.
Sure. One more thing, Susan. On the Buchanan case, the mother is friends with two sex offenders, by the way.
Oh,
and one
isn't it? Is it Mary Beth Buchanan?
Yeah.
Didn't the doctor get removed from any wrongdoing?
No.
Yeah, I saw that somewhere. He's not being charged or not.
Oh, there's three of them, but two of them she's very good friends with.
Are we talking about the U.S. Attorney Mary Beth Buchanan?
No, I'm sorry. We're talking about the Buchanan, that Navia.
Okay.
Mom. She's friends with two or three sex offenders. One was ruled out, and the other two are still there, and she's still seeing them.
And are there kids around?
Yeah.
The little girl is missing, Susan.
Okay, the one out of Michigan. And both the sex offenders, are they registered or not?
Yeah.
Yes.
You know...
Okay, I'll let that go. I just want to tell you.
Is Robin back on yet or no?
No.
All right. That for anyone, you have to have your head examined for dating somebody that is a known sexual predator, period. Domestic violence is one thing, but a predator, a sexual predator who takes children, and I mean, my God, where...
Her mother actually has custody of the child, had custody of the child until she went missing, but she was with, the grandmother. And the mother totally defends her, what she calls now, well, he's just my friend, that obviously they had a relationship. And
you need, there's no law against that, but doesn't it say as a registered sex offender you must not be near children?
Well, that was one of the big questions everybody was asking today, and I would certainly think so. And for her to defend him in any way, shape, or form, you know, he's had, from what I read, I looked him up tonight, and so far there were three different charges. One he only spent 13 months in jail for, and that was the rape of a little girl. And the other two were a little bit older children that he basically pushed himself on and French kissed, basically. I'll put it nicer than they did in the paper.
I mean, Nikki, I could see if you didn't know and somebody had pled down and so that they didn't have to register. But when you say register, this is red flag.
Well,
dangerous.
Yeah, and she's like, everybody deserves a second chance and all that. The mother needs to have that child. If we find her, ever, she needs to be... I don't know what she needs to do. She needs to make sure that she can ever be around that child again.
I mean, parents, it's a privilege to have a child. And if you subject your child to that, then in my opinion, there should be something with automatic custody removal of your brain. Because you're putting that child in danger, in harm's way, in automatic access to somebody who can't keep their sick hands to themselves, who's going to hurt you, or you may disappear.
Well, you know what? Isn't there a charge? Doggone it, I'm sorry, I don't feel very well today, so my mind is going blank. Who's our host?
I didn't hear what you said.
Who's our hostess, our guest?
Oh, Robin.
Robin, I'm sorry, my mind just went blank. That she's not on here right now, but isn't there a charge for that when you put your child endangerment, of course, does.
Yes, yeah, but today or last week wasn't, there was the second person questioned, and you know, there has to be, where's a parole agent? Where's all the bells and whistles of safety? You know, also when you're, if you're living with somebody or near an area, you are supposed to have, that's the girl in Michigan. They're doing a search today and a vigil for her, a prayer vigil. Uh-huh. And it's in Monroe County, Michigan.
Oh, that's what this one is for. You sure we're not the same one?
No, it's her. That's her. Because that came over the internet earlier today. That's Neva Buchanan.
Yeah.
And the mother... subject to this little girl to a bad man, somebody that we teach them, that Robin teaches them in her book, Predators and Child Molesters and What Parents Need to Do, teaches parents what to do. This mother just puts this child right in the line of fire.
Yep.
And the mother's 24. That's no excuse. If you're old enough to have reproduction organs, you need to have, you know, safety brain matter as well as far as keeping your child out of harm's way. And the offender, wasn't he like 48 or 50?
You know what? I don't remember.
One of the offenders is an older guy.
Ladies, we have a caller, and the switchboard is acting a little funny, so let me try to get the caller on before we lose the call, okay?
All right.
Caller from area code 203, you're on the air.
Two.
to link up and to be able to hear some of the discussion. I have a situation that's very similar to the woman who I came in on, and that's that I have a daughter. She alleges that her father sexually assaulted her. From the time that she was 18 months old, she's shown signs of having been sexually assaulted. And as it unfortunately plays out too often in court, I ended up losing custody of her. And it didn't matter that her alleged perpetrator, psychologically, by a psychologist, found that he fit the profile for known child abusers. The psychologist could not rule out that he had not sexually assaulted her. He admitted to having sex with an animal. And then on top of that, with Taylor's case, what ended up happening was you have police corruption. I heard the conversation about being able to prove it, documentation. There's documentation that supports her allegations of sexual assault, and there's also documentation that supports police and judicial corruption in this.
Are you the parent? Do you have supervised visitation?
I did have supervised visitation, and during that supervised visitation, she continued to tell, and as I'm supposed to do, I continued to report it. And it got to the point where I've not seen her for a year and a half. A hearing was held, of which I was not invited to, and when I went to visit her, I was told that the visits had been stopped, that I needed to go to the courthouse and find out why they were stopped. It wasn't until 4 months after that, after I had seen her, when finally the record was back in the courthouse. And at that time, what the clerk of court explained to me was it didn't state why. It just said that they stopped the visits, and that was the end of it. And where I stand now is this is in the state of Virginia, and the state of Virginia has a code 48-1 that allows for a special grand jury hearing on issues of a nuisance. Well, police corruption is, in essence, a nuisance.
Is the person whom you were you married to this person?
I was married to him,
okay.
Yes.
Okay, is he a police officer?
He is not. What he is fortunate to have is, first I should say, I'm African-American. He is Caucasian. Where this is taking place is in a place called Prince William County, Virginia. And anyone knowing anything about Virginia and knowing Prince William County knows it is a good old boy county. So being African-American, being a woman, and being a Yankee were strikes against me. And so what ended up happening was he ended up linking himself with people within the government that turned a blind eye.
Okay.
One.
Does he have a position? Does he make a lot of money? B. Does he have a position within government somewhere?
No. He has access to government in that he's a database consultant and he makes six figures. And so any money I had, was depleted in fighting for her.
I tell you what, I don't like the fact that we're doing this. We're not doing this over the phone with your case. Can you do me a favor?
Yes, most definitely.
All right. Because it's not going to get solved here in the next however many minutes we don't have. Email me at contact@movingoutmovingon.com.
Contact@movingoutmovingon.com.
I need your phone number, how I can reach you. Again, and you, everybody that's listening, and this happens a lot, in order to be 10 steps ahead of whatever situation you have, I've got a couple of cases of domestic violence where these guys are allegedly poisoning these women.
Yes.
And doing things. And the computer database is not a place to go back and forth. So if you're, especially if somebody is a database expert or computer expert, you want to get a hold of me or Denny or somebody who's an expert or can help you maybe find a direction, you get your derriere to the library, you set up a Gmail account, and that's how you talk to me, because you're probably being tracked and traced. Then my IP address or whomever you are speaking to gets tracked and traced. So you have to be very careful. And so that if you email me, ma'am, email me from a safe location that you know is safe. I don't want to hear that your computer was swept, because that means nothing.
Yes, okay.
So please do that, and then we'll just go from there. I just don't think, you know, Denny or Nikki, that this is appropriate here.
Okay, what I'd like to do, if it's okay with you, is just to make sure I have the email address correct.
Okay, that's
it good. It is contact at movingoutmovingon.com.
Yes, ma'am.
So there's nothing in between moving out and moving on.
Except my brain matter. No, that's it.
I want to thank Delilah, because it is because of Peace for the Missing that I've been able to reach out to you all. They have been fantastic, because see, I'm not just fighting for my daughter. One of the things I'm doing is trying to work for a judiciary hearing on, in essence, court-ordered child abuse. And
okay.
The people that I've met have been fantastic.
And then Delilah can facilitate this meeting, because that's probably the easiest way. So just that's all you had to say.
Okay. All right. Then that's fine. Then what I'll do is I'll go, because I know that Delilah's on listening. Well, she's on now. So what I'll do is I'll just email her.
All right. And for people that are listening, for missing, abused, any kind of cases, that's peace with the number 4, missing.ning.com. And they promote the shows of Denny and everybody out there. They're a real advocate for change and awareness.
Yes, they are.
Thanks.
Okay, I'm going to hang up and continue to listen and while I shoot an email out to Delilah.
All right.
Thank you very much for the call.
Thank you all very much for what you're doing.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And that's another thing that people listening, if they have cases that I have been finding, because these predators, either sexual or violent, they are so clever that I'm to the point where I'm asking people to do certain things before they even contact me, because I don't know if the offender is monitoring them. And that's a good point for people who don't realize that they have to be very careful about the information that they send to somebody.
Very, very good points. What I'd like to do, the time is flying here. We've only got a few minutes left. I wanted to touch briefly on a couple of other cases, if we can. And unfortunately, we don't have Robin, because one of the pardon me?
Well, Denny, I just have to say, would both of you please apologize to Robin for me? Honestly, my brain I feel so embarrassed that her name just went out of my head.
I've done it too when she upset me, so don't feel bad.
Okay, well, I'm sorry, Robin.
Did you hear me hesitate tonight when the show opened? I couldn't remember who I was. I was who the host was. Only kidding, I hope. I recently, of course, there's been a lot of talk about Casey Anthony case, about the death penalty being back on the table, and a new lawyer is on the scene now, a so-called death penalty expert. And that raised the question in my mind regarding the death penalty. And I don't want to turn this into a death penalty debate. That would have to be a separate program. But a lot of talk is about the cost of a death penalty, prosecuting and carrying out a death penalty. And apparently it costs an awful lot more for the investigation, both from the prosecution and the defense side of things. I guess they put on more expert witnesses, more detailed investigations, and so forth. And then if the defendant is convicted and the death penalty is actually imposed, then you have appeals that can last, in some cases 20 years or longer.
Boy, that's longer than she would have lived, isn't it?
Yeah, and a lot of times the family of the victim doesn't survive the appeal process, and they never really get to see the justice they were expecting. And I was just wondering thoughts on the death penalty. Again, I'm not going to debate whether the death penalty is right or
wrong.
Mark
Glass on Monday, with the appeals of the man who murdered his daughter. You know, overturned. He was denied. I think, and Mark is somebody, parents, they give up, relatives give up when their child has been missing or murdered, and they let the perpetrator win. In this case, no matter what, justice will not be served until everything is exhausted. I don't care if it takes 25 or 30 years, because this little girl didn't have a life. It was taken away from her. It was robbed. It was stolen. It was taken. And in this case, on the death penalty, nothing you could do to this woman is enough, as far as I'm concerned. Because, again, no one is really advocating for this child whose life was taken. No one is really, and are we going to forget about her down the road? Are our grandchildren going to remember her? Is this going to get worse with parents killing their own children? She deserves, the needle now and more. Because if she's responsible for the murder of her daughter, she doesn't deserve to see the light of day. And you have all these experts that are diluting, like a circus, diluting the real issues of murder and sexual abuse of an innocent, helpless child. And that's what I find appalling.
Okay, you know what? I still want to know where the heck the money's coming from, because I guess this death penalty lawyer is supposed to be one of the top ones in the nation. And she's got this dream team and beyond somehow. And is this just for publicity?
I don't know. There's book deals. You've got Diane Fanning writing a book. I'm sure you've got other people down the road who are going to be writing a book. You've got television stations who have an interest. Somewhere along the line, things were probably signed and agreed to, maybe perhaps through a third party, maybe with photos of things that we haven't seen before. I still remember the scream on the 911 call when the grandma said, "It smells like there's a dead body in the car." I will never forget that from day one. So there are other things. Can you imagine? We're so intrigued with this, and book companies and the media is so intrigued that they're willing to pay blood money to get a story on murder that really belongs not in the media. Money, if you're going to pay for money, then pay for money for prevention and education so that these children have a fighting chance to be alive.
Yeah, I just, the whole case has disturbed me from day one, and I've been following it fervently.
Well, look at the lawyer. I can't, I'm not as allergic to him as I am my other friend with Mr. Peterson, but which I don't say his name. Nope. And everybody that says his name on our show gets charged for it. because it just, you give him press. But this guy, Baez, is that his name? He didn't. My dickless wonder legal marshmallow roaster representative. This one is, he was not admitted to the bar. There was a lot of improprieties. He didn't pay his own child support. There were all these issues that were concerning him as a lawyer, as an individual. Think of what he is doing in representing this child, just like the legal marshmallow roaster who had a SWAT team come down on him representing Drew Peterson. I mean, it's kind of funny to watch these people representing these people who know how to think like the predators and the criminals who themselves represent these people. There's something
to that. Absolutely, good point, because I know who that marshmallow person is.
There's something to that. With Baez, he seems so clever, and there's issues with him that I would be concerned with. But then again, so what kind of deals were cut with Grandma, Grandpa, Lee, the brother, and all these other people involved in the case that maybe nobody's thinking about? The deals are already probably sewn up with the promise of, plus the media is following this, and they're putting these talking heads on television.
Well, and for those that might not know, the group they've got now, if anybody else hired them and had any money, this would be a multi-million dollar group of in charge of this case.
So then I want a backdrop of Robin Sachs's book. Behind every single interview that there is for child predators and molesters of what people need to know. Then I feel a little better.
Okay.
Okay.
Since she's not here to plug her own book.
You know,
Robin.
I've become her designated PR person.
Well, that's pretty good.
And you're doing a great job.
What are your books, Susan? Would you remind me?
Moving Out, Moving On, which is, if you go to SusanMurphyMilano.com, you can get it there on ebook, or you can get it over on Amazon.com, Defending Our Lives. And then I'm very proud of the book Time's Up, which is going to be coming out, which is going to help people from being ahead of technology and basically saving their lives. And then the other one that's coming out is called Holding My Hand Through Hell. I'm just proud of both of these. And I'm proud of my association with Juror 13 and you, Denny. I mean, Denny, people don't know this, but Denny took a case that, other people may have shied away from, and helping a crime victim find the truth through a forensic pathology test to see the results, to hopefully pinpoint the person that is responsible for the murder of this one person. I mean, we all do these things behind the scenes. We don't talk about them. You get emails all the time, Nikki. You get cases presented. None of us talk about this, but yet we're all working very hard and quietly, and we're our trusted circle with each other.
Yes, we are. And, Denny, I can't thank you enough either for even hosting my programs, the Juror 13 programs, because I don't know how much people know about you, but you have worked so long in law enforcement and as an investigator and have so many books out yourself. And I know
I'm Denny's new agent.
Well, you know, many of my group, after they met him, they've gone out and read his books. They just love them. Absolutely
they do.
Love them.
He has a great book, and he is invited any time to do Women in Crime, Inc. as a guest post, which I'm still waiting for.
Oh, God, yes.
And you as well are invited as the administrator of Juror 13 to submit a post for Women in Crime, Inc. as well.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
You know, we made the Wall Street Journal yesterday.
Oh, that's so fantastic.
So and people listening, as a guest contributor, you know, we consider and look at posts to put up on crime subjects. So if the listeners are interested in that, they can send it to me at contact@movingoutmovingon.com, and I can, you know, make sure that it possibly gets in there for publication.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very nice. Thank you.
Excellent. That's good. I had that on my to-do list, and I lost the to-do list. So.
That was months ago, Dan.
I know it. Well, listen, we're off the live stream now. We ran out of time. I want to thank Susan and Robin for being on, and we missed about five items I wanted to get to yet. That's just how fast the hour went.
Well, then we'll have to do another show.
Oh, yeah.
I think so, and like I say, there's a lot of important stuff going on that we just didn't make it to. And Nikki, certainly thank you. And we'll schedule something again down the road, and we'll catch up on what we missed tonight.
I appreciate the opportunity, everyone.
Okay.
And Susan, if you're interested sometime, I'd love to have you on my Meet the Author program.
I'm open whenever you want.
Okay. Ah. Thank you very much, ladies. I really appreciate it. And Susan, when you talk to Robin, tell her I certainly appreciate her time tonight.
Okay.
Yes, and so do I. I'll remember her name next time.
Thank you.
Thanks, Susan.
Okay. Thanks, ladies. Have a great night, and we'll talk to you in the future. Bye-bye.
You as well. Bye-bye.